May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Please be seated. I don't know about you, but I have a pretty clear picture in my mind of the scene in our gospel reading today. I can almost see an actual picture framed and hanging on a wall, like a picture in a Sunday school classroom. Actually, I have pictures like that in my head for many of the familiar stories of the gospel. You know, the Good Samaritan that we heard last week, the prodigal son, that story of the tween Jesus teaching in the temple while his parents search for him desperately, all those beloved stories of his birth, and of course, the story we have today of Martha and Mary. I call these images Sunday school pictures of the Gospels. These pictures capture the basic elements of the stories and frame the way that we understand them. The thing is, when we have these familiar stories and we have ready-made pictures to frame them, we can easily lose sight of the fact that the composition of these Sunday school pictures actually represent layers and layers and layers of interpretation. It's helpful sometimes to peel back those layers of interpretation to take a look at what lies beneath. So let's see if this matches your image that you have, your picture of Martha and Mary. I see figures in Renaissance clothing, in the rich tones of a Rembrandt masterpiece. Jesus, of course, is at the center of the picture, sitting at the table. There's shadowy figures of the disciples in the background, waiting to be fed. Mary is sitting on the floor at the feet of her Lord, gazing at his face, rapt, drinking in every word. Meanwhile, Martha is fussing about the table, harried and frustrated at all these people she has to feed. Now, Martha isn't looking at Jesus because she's too busy giving Mary a serious side eye. This picture presents a fairly straightforward lesson. Don't be distracted by the busyness of life. The better part is to sit prayerfully with Jesus and learn from him. This story is so familiar that the lesson is almost proverbial. You know, don't be a Mary. I mean, I got it backwards. Don't be a Martha. Be a Mary. I have to admit, the interpretation of that story has long vexed those of us who are Marthas. After all, how many of you would identify yourselves as a Martha? What if I told you that there is another biblically sound way of interpreting this story that puts Martha and Mary in a very different picture altogether? One that doesn't pit Martha against Mary. Because maybe Mary isn't even in the room. Well, it takes a good bit of good old-fashioned Bible study to create this picture, beginning with a look at the interpretive choices of the translators of the Greek text. Jesus is welcomed into Martha's home. Notice that even in the translation we have, it's only Jesus that enters the house. If there isn't a crowd there to feed, then that isn't the source of Martha's distraction. The text continues, "And she had a sister who was also sitting at the feet of Jesus." It's a little bit different from what you have in your bulletin. There are a couple of things to notice here. Sitting at the feet of a teacher is an idiom that describes being a follower and a student of that teacher. It doesn't necessarily describe Mary's physical location in this scene. It could be describing a habitual activity. The verb form here actually indicates that this is an ongoing activity of sitting at the feet of Jesus, rather than a one-time event. This interpretation is further supported by the word also, which is left out of some, but not all, of the ancient manuscripts. Anyway, the importance of that one small word is that it could indicate that Martha was also one who was in the habit of sitting at Jesus' feet. Take that in for a minute. So both Martha and Mary could have been known as sitters at the feet or disciples of Jesus. A figurative term rather than a literal one. If Martha and Mary are disciples of Jesus, it's possible that they were among the women who followed him about, giving him material support. And if that's the case, perhaps Mary wasn't even at home when Jesus came to visit. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks. Older translations of this passage describe Mary as cumbered. Don't you like that word? It means hindered or hampered. Martha was hindered by much serving. The word here is diaconia, a word meaning service, that early Christians adapted to mean a particular kind of service, ministry. Nowhere else in the New Testament is this word translated as tasks. So we could reasonably apply service or ministry to this situation. Martha was hindered by much service, by much ministry. Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Or, alternatively, Martha may have said, Lord, do you not care that my sister leaves me to diaconin, to serve and minister, alone? In this interpretation of the story, Martha is not the harried, stressed-out caricature that we're so familiar with. She's a disciple, overwhelmed by the demands of ministry. In this interpretation, Martha isn't the jealous sister triangulating Jesus. She's taken on too much and needs help. Does that sound familiar to any of you? I also hear in Martha's plea a hint of plaintiveness. Mary has left her alone. Mary has physically left Martha, perhaps to pursue her own diaconia, her own ministry of discipleship that doesn't include Martha. Martha obviously assumes that Jesus knows where Mary is because she asks him, "Tell her, therefore, that she may help me." Martha, Martha. One thing is necessary, for Mary has chosen a good thing, and it will not be taken away from her. It is not necessary for Jesus' response to set Mary and Martha in opposition. The text doesn't require Mary's part to be better. It can also be translated and interpreted as simply a good thing. The lesson here is less stereotypical than the Sunday school picture I described earlier. The lesson here is more subtle, and it may even be a bit subversive. Jesus is seen interacting with Martha and Mary as disciples in active ministry, just as he is so often seen with Peter and James and John and all the other guys. That's a very different picture from the one that asks, "Are you a Martha or a Mary?" Now you may wonder why I'm taking the time to walk you through this alternative interpretation of the story. It's because I hope that you will see the powerful impact of these interpretive approaches to translation of the Greek words into English. Our holy scriptures are a primary source of God's revelation of God's self to us. And that revelation comes to us layered with this kind of interpretive influence. It's important to remember when we're reading the Bible that it's more than a collection of stories strung together like beads on a string. Rob McSwain, who is a brilliant modern theologian and one of my favorite teachers and mentors, writes about reading the Bible. "The text changes texture according to the light that you shine upon it. Textual meaning is not simply inherent in the intention of the original author, but rather emerges from imaginative and prayerful engagement with the wide but still limited possibilities of meaning provided by the words and sentences of Holy Scriptures. The Bible, you might say, is a hypertext, each word and sentence of which is linked to another." The Sunday school pictures that we have of Bible stories are a starting place, and there is much that can be learned from the lessons they contain. And I'm not saying we should throw that out by any means at all. But there is so much more that God has to say to us in each word and sentence than can be contained in those pictures. And frankly, even in the three readings, a psalm and a sermon that we get on most Sundays. That's why Christopher and I and countless other faithful ministers and priests around the world spend time each week trying to peel back the layers of interpretation embedded in our translations from the Greek and the Hebrew and the Aramaic that make up our English Bibles. That's why we follow the connections from one word or sentence to another, using our God-given imaginations and intellects to form a larger, more detailed picture of what we're reading. Call me a total Bible nerd, and you won't be the first. But I think this is an exciting time to do that kind of reading of Holy Scriptures. The work of linguists, archaeologists, anthropologists, sociologists, historians, and yes, even theologians, shines light on these texts and opens windows into the world in which they were written and makes possible new insights into the revelation of the one who loves us into being, the one who is our companion in the ways of our lives, and the one who keeps nudging our consciousness into greater awareness of God's love for us. I want that bigger, more expansive picture of what the Bible stories hold, not just for myself, but for each one of you, for our children, and for the whole world. Because if the world needs anything right now, it is a big, expansive, generous picture of God's love that doesn't pit us against one another.